Well, like I mentioned in my preview this morning, this is actually a really good time to kind of come in and just drop in on Revelation. We finished up with all of the judgments. We just concluded with the millennium. And as we recall, at the end of the millennium, death and Hades and everything was thrown into the lake of fire. And everything is brand new, and we're entering into what's called the eternal state. Just to kind of give you a little timeline, you have, we'll go present day, right? Present day forward. At some point in time, there'll be the tribulation, which will be right here, okay? You have all the judgments, that's the bulk of Revelation. At the end of Revelation, you have a millennium. This is a time when all the Old Testament prophets, prophecies towards Israel come to fruition. The lion will lie down with the lamb. It'll be a partial end of the curse, but remember what happens at the end of the millennium? Do you remember, John? Yeah, devil is released. He leads a massive rebellion. And so basically, only the saved people walk into the millennium. But they still have children and offspring, and eventually they are deceived and they turn. And so at this point in time, there's an end to it, and all of the dead are judged, and basically is all the dead damned for all time. And basically during the millennium, those people who died or are alive are judged according to the Great White Throne Judgment. And then we see the events of Revelation 21, 1 through 8. I'll just go ahead and read this. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there is no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he will dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be among them. And he'll wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there will be no longer any death. There will no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away." And he who sits on the throne said, "Behold, I am making all things new." And he said, "Write, for these words are faithful and true." Then he said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give to the one who thirsts from the spring of water of life without cost. He who overcomes will inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." So let's look at verse 1. Hey, what does John observe here? I mean, what does he see? What's missing? Okay, earth and sky disappear.
It says there's no longer any sea.
No longer any sea. That's kind of an interesting observation, okay?
I was planning on there being beaches.
Beaches, well. Well, we will talk about that, okay? Anything else? I mean, what's the language we see? John?
New heaven, new earth.
New heaven, new earth, okay? So is he talking about like heaven as in the place where God lives? Is that what he's talking about? Yeah, it's a whole new world. I mean, you think about the heaven, you think about the stars. So all the stars, all the planets, the earth, all of it is new, and we'll talk about the implications of that, okay? And so this is basically building off of a theme that we see even in the Old Testament. In Isaiah 65, 17, "For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth. The former things will not be remembered or come to mind." Now, in the midst of the millennium, you have a lot of the effects of the curse lifted, remember? The animal kingdom no longer is attacking men. You have the kid who's able to play with the cobra. If somebody dies at 100, that is a tragic death. But in the eternal state, every single impact of the curse is completely removed. Okay, and we see that later on as he kind of really builds on it. Now, he makes a mention of no sea. Now, I suspect if you were in England, how would you regard the sea?
Awfully important.
Yeah, we're reading a book to the kids called Our Island Story, and it's a book about England being an island, and how did they acquire the empire? They ruled the seas. They ruled the oceans. Now, if you were a Jew, what did you think of the sea? Yeah, you weren't necessarily a seafaring person, okay? And you look, you look at it from a Jewish perspective, and even from our perspective, I mean, terrible things come from the sea. Tsunamis come from the sea. It is the womb of hurricanes. It is the abode of sharks. Where's John? Do you remember where John is when he's writing this? Island of Patmos, okay? The sea were the walls of his prison. You kind of see the imagery here? And so where does the beast come from? He comes from the waters. I mean, think about those old Godzillas, right? Just kind of emerging. Okay, thank you, Adam. That you guys ever watch that? Okay, never mind. Yeah, guilty pleasure. We'll watch it together sometime. But the sea is, I mean, the sea is dark, mysterious. I mean, it's unexplored. It's uncharted. It's a frontier. I mean, all of that. And it's dangerous. I mean, you ever go swimming? I remember one time I went boogie boarding, and there were these huge riptides, and the waves, they weren't the rolling waves. It kind of went straight up and then down. I remember actually trying to go over one instead of through it, which was a mistake. And I just remember being on top of this wave, and it was just like slow motion where I thought, this is not going to be good. You know, as I'm down, I just see all this water pummeling me. I mean, so I know you like the beach, Melanie, but I have nightmares about it. So it's not not too bad, but... But the place of, I think the overall theme that's being captured here is the place of danger is gone. I mean, the world is no longer a dangerous place. Okay? So that's what we see as far as the new creation. Now, it is interesting that God eradicates the really all aspects of creation that terrorize mankind. But have you ever thought about why does God, I mean, why did he have all these hurricanes, avalanches, forest fires? I mean, what was the intent of that? What do you think God was, I mean, why do you think God allowed them to be here for as long as they were in light of the fact that they won't be part of the eternal state? Okay, show his power. Okay. How do these natural phenomena, especially these terrorizing ones, really serve God's purposes?
So it shows the brevity of the life.
Okay.
How we could be gone in an instant.
Okay. Creates some perspective, doesn't it? It's amazing. I think it was John MacArthur, who ministers in L.A., after the big Northridge earthquake, he said his services were packed right after that. I mean, it just gives you a sense of you don't have control. Yeah, the helplessness of the earthquake. Yeah, what else? Yeah.
Kind of to dovetail with what you're saying, mm-hmm. in the eternal state, those won't be required because God won't dwell among the people.
Mm-hmm.
But now, when we're in a different state than that, it's kind of like not so much a sign, but proof of God's power.
Okay, proof of God's power. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it awakens them to the need to turn towards God, yeah.
Let me use some of this as instruments of his punishment.
Okay, and that's possible. I mean, sometimes he does in the Old Testament use these types of events to punish people. We will see that in the future, for instance, some of the natural phenomenon doing that. Okay, yeah, what else? Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, and there is some, like, even earthquakes, right? It resets the tectonic plate. So, I mean, there's a natural reason for it. I think one thing that it does is it shows you the heinousness of sin. Okay, so when sin is completely eradicated, all of these things like the hurricanes and the tornadoes and the earthquakes and just these lethal phenomena are gone. And I think the message is, I mean, if I were to do a funeral for somebody who died in tornadoes, this is the way it shouldn't be. I mean, the reason why this happened is because of the presence of sin in this world. And we should long for a world without sin where stuff like this doesn't happen anymore. Does that make sense? And so there's kind of there's a theological message here of wiping out everything dangerous to restore the world to its Edenic state, to where it should be when the world was created good. And it didn't include those natural disasters. Okay, and so part of this new heavens and the new earth is all of that will be done away with. I think you have the sea, but really anything that is dangerous is gone. Okay. So then we see another, we have another observation question here in verse 2. What do we see here? Yeah, what do you see in verse 2? Yeah.
We see God coming down to earth.
We see God. What's the tabernacle? Well, that's what he declares, okay? But what do we actually see? Look at verse 2. The holy city, okay? Which is the New Jerusalem. Now, what happened to the old Jerusalem? It's gone, right? New heaven, new earth. All of that has been, I mean, there's some debate about whether or not it's a radical refurbishment. Did he just kind of rebuild the earth and reconstruct it, or kind of detonate it and then just start over from scratch? I kind of lean towards refurbishment in that case. But either way, it is brand new. So clearly there's no Jerusalem, no cities, and so except for the one that comes down out of heaven. Okay, now how is this described?
Coming down.
Okay. So the origin, so what does that suggest about his origin? It's above, okay, yeah.